Okay, well, just for the sake of those who were not here on Thursday, let me just make a couple of comments as to what we have shared together. On Thursday evening, in the early evening, we had a session in which I spoke a little bit about what the healing ministry of the church is all about. Laid out at least my understanding of how that ministry should be understood and how it can be practiced. And we discussed some of the issues and questions arising from that. And then Thursday evening, in this room, we had a healing service. There was a very big turnout. The place was quite full. And a fair number of people, a large number of people, came forward for the ministry of healing. Now, in other words, we have been working together on the healing ministry in that way over the last day or two. And arising out of that, some people have asked the question, how come there's not a great deal of this sort of thing in our local parishes and congregations? And how could we possibly enable it to happen? I think part of the reason for that question arises out of the fact that, gee, look how many people came to the healing seminar, and look how many people came to the service of healing. It obviously was something that a lot of people had a very real interest and concern about. And there were a great deal of areas of need relating to Christian healing that became evident. And this is true not only here, but all over the place. Does this mean that at the local church level we are somehow failing? Perhaps Holden Village isn't an exception. Maybe there are lots of people in our congregations who, given the opportunity, would really respond to a healing ministry, something that would meet them really where they are. Isn't it, in any case, part of the Christian witness to the kingdom? So that's the background to this evening's session. I'm going to simply mention five things which have occurred to me which may set an agenda for us tonight. And before I do that, let me say it would be helpful at any point in this evening. We won't go on for very long, because we're all tired after a good Saturday. It would be helpful for those who have been sharing in the healing service and the seminar, who have been reflecting on it, perhaps who have in some way been helped by it, to share with the group whatever they feel would be appropriate and helpful if they so desire. A couple of people have already spoken to me about what the healing service meant for them, in different ways. So it might be helpful if others want to do that. But don't feel under any constraint at all to do that if you don't wish to. The five things that I thought we could reflect on. The first is to identify, very briefly, because I don't want us to concentrate on negative things, to identify very briefly some of the reasons why there may be resistance in a local congregation to a healing ministry. And then to identify some of the reasons why there should be, and I would say will be, a positive response. Then to reflect for a moment on some of the resources that are available, and then on what this might mean for a local church. And finally, how do you get the thing off the ground? So those are, I suggest, five sort of items on the agenda that provide us with a skeleton to which we can work. I don't know. Now I'm going to open it up because others might have some other suggestions as to how we should proceed.
I think my Missouri Synod is too steeped in tradition to allow anything like that to happen.
Okay, so we're beginning to identify reasons. We're on number one. You're affirming the agenda. Okay, that's good. Shall we just stick with that for a while and let's get it out onto the table? Where do we see some of the reasons, or what are some of the reasons for resistance to this kind of ministry? Yeah.
Well, I think that healing service is an emotional service, and I think a lot of people are embarrassed to get emotional with a lot of the people.
Okay.
The other night, the way you explained it and took it away from the healer person to the church, if I could say it like that.
Are you saying that part of one reason for resistance is when a healing ministry is identified with a kind of superstar faith healer?
What they see on TV.
Okay, so that it's got a bad image.
Yeah.
Gives
bad press.
Bad press.
I think that bad image aspect can be expanded to healing is a gift of the Spirit, and there are other gifts of the Spirit which are elicit more reaction than, say, healing. And it's, to some degree, I think, guilt by association, too.
The fact that we haven't been doing it and others are doing it. And
I'm thinking, you say, speaking in tongues or anything like that, and people get an immediate image, and then, you know, this seems to be tied to charismatic, or however you want to term it, a rather negative image, I think.
Okay.
I think also one of the things is seeing healing only in terms of a sort of spectacular physical manifestation of it. You know, that if you talk about healing by faith, it must be somebody who's dying of cancer who's miraculously cured, or someone who's crippled who's suddenly walking again. And not seeing its wider dimension of the whole person involved in this.
All right, any other major reasons for resistance that you would like to identify? I think this is quite helpful to do that.
But we're always fearful of hoaxes.
Of hoaxes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of the,
you know, there's some people that are putting on a show, you know.
Okay. So let's just then say that one thing is tradition, another is our reticence about emotionalism. Another is, what was the point that you made again?
That person, the one person.
Yeah, that's right, sort of a superstar image. And then the point about,
the image aspect.
Again, the image in terms of other gifts, sort of. This is a Pentecostal thing, mm-hmm. not in our tradition, which goes back to the Missouri Synod thing. Okay, are there
is
any
it,
other?
Is it genuine?
Oh, and the hoax.
Is it genuine?
Yeah.
Okay, I think also that it might discriminate. We don't want to put a spiritual label on it if some are healed and some aren't.
Okay, so there's a. How are we going to sort of say that?
Well, just discrimination.
Yeah, sort of false expectations aroused or something like that. All right. I think that's helpful, just to have that in the back of our minds, that these are some of the reasons why people do react negatively and why perhaps healing ministry of the church isn't a reality in probably the majority of mainline churches and congregations. Let's identify some of the reasons which people may have for responding positively then to a healing ministry if such began to happen in your congregation. I can think of one immediately, and that is that a lot of people who are in need of healing.
Except the way you explained it the other night, is what I think is so good about how you explain all of the types of healing. Like you were just saying, not just the physical healing, but you're talking about healing the memories and relationships. And I think once it's explained like that, everybody in the congregation can look at themselves almost as in need of that kind of healing that would fit in one of those areas that you discussed.
Okay. So, if we had to look at those five or six things that we said are negative, we would say that one of the important things in the light of what you're saying is somehow to redeem what we mean by healing, to counter the bad press, the bad image that healing has got in many circles. Does that sound like a...
Also to show the need. If I came to a healing, I wouldn't come to a cancer or something, you know, someone might think. Unless they were you to explain it.
So, one of the key things then would be the need in a congregation for some fairly clear, simple, basic teaching on what a healing ministry is all about and why it is not what many people might assume it is.
I think people are anxious to get a feeling that God is working in our daily lives too, which healing ministry could help demonstrate for them, evidence for them.
Okay. There's one very dramatic sign as to why I think a healing ministry would be welcomed by people, and I don't know if you can think about that, think of what I'm getting at. And which churches in your community are growing the fastest?
Pentecostal.
Yeah. And which churches are involved in healing?
Same ones.
Does that sort of say something to us? It should say something. Now, of course, because something's growing fast, doesn't mean to say it's right or good or the truth or anything of that sort. We didn't draw that kind of conclusion. But clearly, there's a need that is being ministered to in some way. Any other comments on some of the reasons why we may proceed with some kind of expectation that yes, this will be something welcomed by our congregations?
Well, I think that the services that we have now really are intended to be healing services. It's just that we're neglecting a lot of the areas of healing. And if it could be presented that we're already having healing services, but they're too limited.
Do you want to say more about that? I think that sounds interesting.
Well, maybe someone else could add to it from their attitude. But anyway, the sermons are supposed to heal our attitudes and heal our relationships with other people. And many of the things you brought out, but we're neglecting them. Not physical, except for praying for someone who is ill. Still, it is healing.
Okay.
And like this was brought out the other night too, that you lay hands on a candidate for a ministry. You lay hands, we in our church, when we go up to communion, the whole family goes and they lay hands on the ones that are taking communion. They say a special prayer with those little ones. So it's already being if they just realize it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this actually moves neatly into the third sort of thing that I had mentioned, and that is discovering the potential resources that already exist, and some of the other resources that we can also discover in our different traditions and in the Christian tradition as a whole.
Has anyone mentioned to you that the occasional the Lutheran Occasional Book of Services have a healing service.
Can you hear back there?
No.
Oh, okay.
The Occasional Services book that the pastors just got about a year ago, shortly less than that, has a service of healing in it, as well as prayers at the bedside of someone who is hooked up to machines, for instance. I mean, it's quite modern. But the service of healing, I think, surprised everybody when it came out. But it's in there. Now, Lutheran Occasional Service.
Somebody needs to scour the writings of Luther and see whether he didn't sort of slip in something that you could use. Well, like we had the other night where we discovered that Martin Luther really had a theology of Mary, which would make most Catholics today feel as though something that they had claimed for themselves was actually not their own possession. So maybe there's some dimensions in Luther that Lutherans could discover that we've forgotten. If I remember rightly, so there are some very interesting things in Luther about healing. And maybe these need to be dug out and to look at and say, well, what is there in our tradition that we could work with a little bit? I mean, if you find that there isn't anything, that doesn't mean to say you don't have to proceed. You know, I don't think Luther had the last word on things, but we needn't debate that tonight.
In terms of one of the emphases, you know, from what I gather from Williams, is, and from Luther himself, is this thing of salvation is by faith and not by works. In other words, it's not something we ourselves do, but it's a gift of God. And yet, as far as our health is concerned, it's very much a do-it-yourself thing. You know, we have a mentality, I know I did for so long, that when it comes to illness and sickness and you go to the doctor, you go to the psychiatrist, you go to, you know, you try to work it out in terms of relationships, work it out in your own strength, without seeing that this is also a gift of God. Not that God is now going to do it all, but to, you know, in terms of just bringing God into the healing process in a much more definite way in terms of praying specifically for that thing. You know, so it's part of our whole faith thing in seeing that salvation is a gift of God and that we trust in Him.
Okay, that's helpful because, as I mentioned the other night, salvation has been narrowed to a very unbiblical understanding of things. Salvation in the New Testament isn't simply how do I move from earth to heaven. Okay, salvation in the New Testament, in the Bible as a whole, is the way in which God makes us whole and restores creation. And that's what we're on about when we talk about salvation. So that passage we read in the service the other night from Mark chapter 2, where Jesus says, your sins are forgiven, and take up your bed and walk. A whole lot of things are being put together there. Forgiveness of sins, healing, and in several places he talks about go in peace, your faith has made you whole, or your faith has saved you, and he's in fact referring to a healing that has taken place. So there's a very close connection between salvation and healing and wholeness. So if we do believe in justification by faith, as good Lutherans should, And other Christians can also believe that too. Most of us do. So this means that our wholeness is very closely related to faith, to receiving the gift of God. That's not just something that touches our inner beings in terms of salvation of our souls, or however you want to describe that dimension, but making us whole is something that we need to look at in terms of justification by faith, and not see the healing as something separate from that. Does that make sense to people? Yeah.
The problem is that problem I see in that is that if you aren't healed, then is it because your faith was not strong enough? And I think that, you know, very bad.
Yeah, well, of course, that's also a case of justification by faith. Or if we're not saved, is it because we didn't believe sufficiently? And of course, that isn't true, because in fact, we are saved by grace. The amount of our faith isn't the important element in that. It's the gift of God and the grace of God that is the overwhelming dimension that we respond to in trust. So that would apply equally in healing. But I mean, that does raise a whole series of questions that one would need to work through in a congregation as to, for example, why does God apparently heal some and not others? Why, let's say on Thursday night, were some people helped more than others? Perhaps one or two people were healed and others apparently not healed. How are we going to handle that kind of thing? Yeah, I think that's very important. And a great deal of thinking and sensitivity is required in a congregation to work at those kind of questions.
I think, I'm new tonight, and this is my first night, but I'm just still catching on as to what's happening. I think you're at a point where the problem comes in that we oftentimes neglect to understand the nature of disease. It's been known that about 60% of the people in the hospital are there because up here or there, it's not a physical cause, it's an emotional, mental problem.
Right.
All the way from a common cold to very severe diseases.
Yeah.
And see, this begins to touch upon why are some healed, as you speak about, and why some aren't. Mm-hmm. I think the suggestions right there. Where's the cause? You know, if I break a leg, if I have a pain in the back, there's a big difference.
Sure. Yeah, I think this is important. We talked a little bit about psychosomatic illness and things of that sort, which you are bringing back into our minds here, and that's very right. Of course, healing must be seen in its totality. And that does include physical healing that may not be so related to emotional causes, as well as other physical things which are emotional. Yeah, that's right. And we need to see that.
This is why also important. I think it's so. This is why I think it is so important that it should be a healing community, or take place within a church, which is an ongoing thing, where people do know each other and are there for a long time, and not that you go off to some healing meeting where something may or may not happen, and then you have to deal with these questions or regard to or the problems afterwards. But sometimes healing isn't an instant thing. You know, this is what you mentioned the other night. It's an ongoing thing, and very often the cause of the problem is very deep-seated. You know what you're saying. It's something that's been there a long time, and very often it's a case of that the community needs to support the person and support each other in an ongoing look at this. This is why I think it's important to talk about it, to think about it, and that a large number of people accept that God can heal in this situation, but that he doesn't always heal in a quick sort of miraculous way, but that to expect that healing will take place in the community.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think even if your problem is not healed immediately, if your attitude changes towards your problem, I think you are healed too.
It's the healing process is at work. Yeah, right. Right.
If you look at it from a different, you feel better about it, or you feel...
Sure.
I think then that's also healing.
Yeah.
My sense is we've been talking pretty much about personal or individual healing, and sometimes families need to be healed.
Yeah.
Or couples,
yeah.
Or groups, like maybe a choir director and an organist and some choir.
Sure. In my experience, it's normally the pastor and the organist. But I think you're right, and I think just to fill in, on Thursday when we talked about this, I mentioned various forms of healing. The one was the physical. The other, the inner healing of emotions and memories and a bunch of other things, and all interconnected, and then the healing of relationships, because often, I mean, well, that's part of the healing ministry, yes. And I shared at some point, I forget when, maybe not in the healing seminar, but at another point, on the importance of the giving of the peace in the Eucharistic context, as not just a hi, how are you today? Was a good sermon, hey, yeah, kind of discussion that sometimes goes on when the peace is given. But the peace actually as a healing opportunity in the life of the church, and I talked a little bit about this the other day. There were several people who came forward for healing here, and in my experience in the past, have asked for the healing of relationships, and I think this is a very important dimension.
One resource that we have that isn't used too often are the confessional services.
Right. Yeah. I think this is... that brings us back to the point that Isabel was saying about the healing in the context of the congregation, because if you're going to have a healing ministry, you have to have a congregation that is becoming more and more a healing community in a whole bunch of ways. Not just in terms of the kind of healing we've been talking about now, but healing within the community. Healing that we've been talking about is integrally related to the ministry of peace and shalom and a whole bunch of other things. It's not unrelated, because we're talking here about another dimension of God's salvation, of God's making whole. We need to see that. But there's need for a supportive, caring, healing community in terms of the specific kind of healings that we're talking about now is fundamental. For example, somebody said to me after Thursday she had felt that something real happened in her life, but wished she could report more, something more dramatic. I thought about that a little bit, and to pick up what somebody else said, it's very important to see healing as a process, that may begin in a new way at a particular service of worship. But that's not the end of it. It sometimes starts off in an almost imperceptible way, the changing of an attitude or whatever it may be, and that service becomes a catalyst for the process of healing. But what is important in that process is the caring and nurturing and support of other people who are sensitive to that process within the life of the congregation. And the danger that Isabel pointed out of people going off to a big tent where there's a healing revival kind of service and going forward for healing, and then there's a tremendous letdown if nothing happens, and they're on their own unless somehow there's some other infrastructure where they can be absorbed. That is part of the bad image thing. That's part of the bad image. And it's actually very counterproductive to the healing ministry of the church. So when we talk about the healing ministry of the church, we have to, in the same breath, talk about the renewal of the life of the church as a whole. The healing ministry is not going to happen if the congregation is not going through renewal in a whole bunch of ways at the same time. Yeah.
I guess that's, before you started your talking there, that was one of my questions, is that, you know, seeing the benefits of healing, not only for the direct benefit of that person that is healed, for example, but a strengthening of the body. It's the Holy Spirit working to strengthen the body and for the glory of God. And I think that we have to look at it in broader terms than just the particular person that is being healed.
Mm-hmm. John, I have a question about, I think, the perception too of what occurs at the healing. You're bringing this out, I think, very clearly now, that this process is what the healing service is about. It is not simply someone throwing down their crutch and walking away, but rather recognizing that even with the crutch, there is healing within that community, that the healing is an ongoing, continuing process, and it is not based upon signs primarily. Mm-hmm. And I think for me that's a good insight to carry away from.
Yeah, the signs are bonuses.
Yeah.
Yeah, but isn't what you say is perfectly true, and it's, isn't this the case in any case with, let's say, a person who goes in for surgery? The healing doesn't take place on the operating table. There's a long period of convalescence and all kinds of things. In fact, the healing might not take place at all on the operating table. Any understanding of healing is in terms of process, and I think this... Yeah, thank you for emphasizing that, Paul. That's good.
Well, I think that's very good, because a lot of people can't live without their illnesses. It's necessary. It identifies them.
Mm-hmm.
And gives them sympathy and care and rallies people around them. And you take that illness away and you almost destroy the person. I think it's very important to realize this.
Okay. Right. Well, and that, of course, raises another interesting thing, and that is there are people who... do have very serious illnesses in a congregation, and really, in one sense, one could say that the process of healing really implies death, and ultimately that is the healing that a person may have to look forward to. But that person could be a real sign in the life of the congregation. In other words, those who are ill and sick can be part of the ministry of healing. And how often it is that people like that, who have got some real infirmity, are a real blessing to other people in terms of the healing ministry. Not everybody gets healed in the way that we would like them to be healed. Yeah. You know, the Lutherans might say, why doesn't God heal everybody? Why just some? Calvinists say, gee, he's healed some, thank God. You know, it's an old thing, he saved some and not others. Well, gee, he has saved some at any rate. I think we've got to rejoice in those signs of healing that do take place, but also be aware that we're dealing here with a mystery and with a whole bunch of surprises, of as we talked about on Thursday.
That was the most helpful thing you said yesterday.
Do you want to say that more loudly so that others can hear how good I was?
Fantastic. Stay another week, please. Well, would you say something more about that, though, the surprise? Remember that couple you told about who came to you later and said they weren't healed, but they are able to deal with their illness better, and that you were pointing out that it was God decides how these people will be healed,
yeah,
and not we and our expectations. That's really good.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure that I can remember exactly what I said, but it was something like this, that the healing ministry of the church is really a ministry of being open and sensitive to God's surprises. In this way, that sometimes people come forward for healing, and they come forward and they share with you in that act of healing what their particular problem is, and you pray for healing in that particular area. And a day or two later, they phone you or they see you and they say, hey, that didn't happen, but something else happened. A surprising thing happened. And that just reinforces the fact that healing ministry is actually God's ministry, not ours. And we've neither got a mechanical technique nor a set of formula which we put into operation in the healing ministry. What we are doing, and this is why it's normally within the context of worship, what we are doing is simply putting ourselves at the disposal, as it were, of God's gracious activity, in the same way as we come to receive communion or whatever it is, or to hear the word. Incidentally, did any of you pick up that very Lutheran passage, sentence in Mark's Gospel, and that healing thing? Jesus was preaching the word. That was the context in which the healing took place. It was in the preaching of the word that that guy to be healed. And it's interesting, in this service book that you mentioned, this new Lutheran one, the heading of the healing service is a service of the word for healing, or something like that. Yes, it's, okay, the Missouri Synod would buy that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, does anybody want to share anything that arose out of Thursday night that might be helpful in terms of what we've been talking about?
I felt better after I gave my request. Not knowing the ultimate of it yet.
In the intercessionary time?
In asking for someone else.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
I think our people need to be reassured that the pastors are taking an active part in healing services and so on, and are more than happy to come when called on together with other believers, and this could be a really uplifting community act. Building a faith, whether we can see what's happened in our lives or whoever's being specifically prayed over, but it's a healing in so many ways, as has been mentioned.
Yeah, I think, you know, just thinking about pastors for a moment, the average pastor, in my experience, would like to do this very much, but is very scared that he will do it and nothing will happen. I mean, I know that feeling. And therefore, while he might say, yeah, the healing ministry is part of the ministry of the church, I'm just not the right person to do it. And that is why I think it is important, and I come back to this partly for the because of some who weren't here, that when you have a healing ministry in the church, it is a ministry of the body. It's a ministry of the body. I'm talking about the community, the body of Christ. And therefore, I always feel that it's very important in the act of laying on of hands that it's not just one person, but two or three people within the community who lay on hands. One of whom may have quite clearly the gift of healing, but really the laying on of hands is an extension of the whole body's concern for that person who is being prayed for, and therefore it's not the healing ministry of one individual, and if he or she fails, as it were, then the thing crumbles. It's the ministry of the body.
Maybe that's why James 5 talks about elders,
yeah.
And plural there.
Yeah, get the elders together and get a bottle of oil and
go to,
yeah.
What was that, James 5?
James, in the last few verses of James 5, if anyone is sick, then call the elders and they will come and lay hands on you and pray.
I wonder what Luther would have thought about that. He wasn't too crazy about James.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's keep that a little quiet, shall we? Yeah.
From your earlier comments this evening about the Pentecostal church and mm-hmm. our friends there, I have a question that sort of... wonders if we as Lutherans have so much going for us. Why has this element of hesitancy and perhaps a sense of fear of failure and all the other questions and doubts which come upon us when a request comes? Is there something within our own Lutheran mind that doesn't allow this as compared to, say, even in the Pentecostal mind? They seem so much freer and right now, let's pray for healing.
Yeah, I think that in the Lutheran tradition there is a kind of a concern that our feelings and emotions will be mistaken for real faith, okay? And I think that's a legitimate fear. There's a fear of subjectivism, as the philosophers and theologians might say, and a stress upon the objectiveness of God's grace and action on our behalf. I think that's a very important dimension that we mustn't lose sight of. I think there, of course, also within Lutheranism, there's a pietistic strain, particularly I think in Norwegian Lutheranism, and also in some German Lutheran forms, where emotion and the subjective element is very important. And I would suspect that I would wonder why healing isn't part of that sort of thing. But I would guess that if you had to go to Brazil and see the Lutherans there, you might find that there's healing taking place in Lutheran services there, or in Africa. So that raises the question, maybe it's a cultural thing rather than a purely theological thing. Maybe it's because Anglo-Saxons and Northern Europeans, Western Europeans and Northern Americans who are white and so on don't like this kind of thing culturally. You know, there may just be that dimension to it as well.
Isn't part of it also not only true for Lutherans, but I know it's true for our own church and for many others, that for so long we have neglected the part of the Spirit, you know, the Holy Spirit plays in the Trinity, having concentrated on the Father and the Son and Jesus with us. And it's only now, I think, you know, sort of worldwide movement of discovering again that the Spirit is the one in the Trinity who is with us and who works through us, and that there's a power there and a gift that we just need to appropriate more. We need to expect more. We need to expect the Spirit to be with us more, to be working within the congregation, working within us. Discovering again something that's always been there, but we've never taken notice of it.
Well, I can't quite go along with the idea that we as Lutherans have to be apologetic for being involved in the healing process. I think the Lutheran Church, historically, at least in the last couple of hundred years, have been at the basis of building all kinds of hospitals and institutions of care and whatever, nursing homes. And I think we forget that we are all the ministry that way also. And secondly, I think that there's more healing taking place in our services than we give credit. And the fear of failure, I think we have a different attitude towards not presuming that we can expect miracles. On my own little experience here, at Christmas time, our choir went to sing at the little lady's house, and she was ill, and she had back pain or whatever. She was a pastor. Come on over and pray. The pain goes away, so I didn't know what to do. I went over there and prayed. The pain went away and she got up and served us.
Sure.
But, okay, I don't think we're afraid of failure, but I think we have a better perspective of the healing process and not get caught into this kind of thing that would say, now, if I pray and it didn't happen right now, either your prayer wasn't good enough or your faith wasn't good or your God isn't good enough.
Sure.
So I'm not apologetic as to what happens.
No, I don't think there's any need to be. I think the point that is being made is that there are plenty of resources within each Christian tradition, I believe, because each Christian tradition that is Christian arises out of this out of an understanding of wholeness and salvation and healing and so on. Sure.
One specific person in the Seattle area is Bill Boswick, who has a healing and prayer ministry out of Issaquah and has gone to various churches and presented seminars on a weekend basis to kind of present the whole idea of prayer and healing to the whole church. And he's a Lutheran, and a Norwegian Lutheran has now come to this. So that's...
What's Issaquah?
Near Seattle.
It's a town.
Right.
Okay. Well, I think there's some very useful things that have come out of this.
I was doing some thinking about, you know, we're talking about when to do it, some practical considerations. We talked about having people stay after they receive communion and speak to you. I wonder, well, I guess in my own situation, I think that might be a little embarrassing for people. And I heard of it, some pastor suggested that, he, I don't know if he did this every Sunday or maybe once a month, but he stayed after in the chancel rather than going to shake hands. He shook hands when the people came in that day. And then he stood in the state of the chancel, and then as the people were filing out, other people would wait and then they would come forward,
sure,
as you had suggested. And I think that might be more comfortable for Lutherans who might not want everybody to know that they just stalled the whole communion process.
We're kind of concerned about getting it clear.
Oh, yeah. I think the practical things have to be looked at in each situation as to what is most appropriate, what is most helpful, what is least jarring.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of
things.
Yeah. I don't think we should do things that make it more difficult. My only concern is that while this is by no means something that should categorically be confined to the act of worship or Eucharistic context or anything of that sort, that is a very helpful context. And if it's something that takes place after that is over, as you suggest, or within it in a smaller congregation, or in some other way, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the things that impressed me a great deal the other night was that although I didn't go up to be healed, I felt like more of a participant because I was in the room where the people were that were being healed. And I think that would be an important thing, to be a participant with friends that are...
Did people feel a high level of participation on Thursday night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, the setting was ideal, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't daylight, it was dark, and there were the candles, and it was a small group. Yeah, it was very moving, I thought. Mm-hmm. It was quite emotional, actually, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe Lutherans would like that in the bright daylight, you know. But there were no children here, or anything, which made it, regarding his children, they made it very quiet.
I think Lutherans are just like other people, and
you know, if we started to do this in our church, ironically, our pastor will be here next week. You know, about 35 of us from our church here this week. But you know, what the helpful thing would be if somehow you either could put on tape, which you did. In that.
It is on tape.
Okay, so if I can, I'll buy a copy. Because that's explanation in the setting was very important, because for us to do this in our church, we've got to have our pastors okay on the thing. And I know that, you know, it's going to be tough to sell him on. And yes, he has heard that tape and these kind of things, but he's open to more things than you might imagine, perhaps.
Can I say something about, you know, in our own congregation, because we spoke about it, we actually spent quite a long time talking about it in sort of small fellowship groups or discussion groups,
yeah,
and reading quite a lot about this. And it was only really when people were more ready and felt, yes, now let's, you know, we've read about it, we've talked about it, we can see the possibilities, we're open to God doing something, let's go and do it now. That I think it really works. I don't think we can push this on anybody. Because, you know, and I think here, in a sense, we did it on a voluntary basis, that only people who wanted to come would come. You know, which is different in a congregational service where everybody feels it's their service and they're going to come anyway. And if you suddenly foist something different on them, they react. And so we were surprised that in fact so many people did come, you know, which shows that there is an interest, that people are open to it. But I think it's different in an ordinary congregation. It does take quite a long period of preparatory searching and discussing and looking into it and feeling ready for it, that yes, you know, I believe something's going to happen now, let's do it. Let's ask God in a specific time, in a specific way.
Yeah.
But I think Dave raised that interesting point, though. The biggest obstacle I see is the clergy, at least from my vantage point, the churches, that if, let's assume we could find someone who had the gift of healing, and we decided as a small fellowship group to go ahead and start this, I don't think we'd get to first base unless we had, you know, some input from the town. I had to go put a child in bed. I had a comment earlier as a physician, as a surgeon, about the comment made earlier about healing not being instantaneous. It's interesting that in the Christian context we expect it to be that way. And biblically the implication is it is that way, and it probably was.
But certainly medically, as you said, I amplify that point, is it virtually never was that way. I was trying to think after Thursday night of the opportunities we have to really have instantaneous cures, and there are really none. As a surgeon, as you say, out in the operating room, I do my thing, but that isn't when the healing occurs. And I think in my practice, you know, it's an on, the majority of people, it's an ongoing thing for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think that's important. And part of that process is an event that may help to just get the thing moving. I had a beautiful experience once. I was conducting this mission that I was telling you about the other night, and a woman came up three or four times during the course of the week for prayer in front of the altar table. And the third time she came up, she said to me, "You must be tired of seeing my face, because I've come up each night to virtually for prayer and for some ministry." So I didn't quite know how to handle it. When, so she said, "Do you think God will be angry with me for wanting to come and get as much from him as I can?" And I think that, you know, yeah, the healing thing, there's perhaps an event here and a thing there and maybe another thing. Why does it just have to be one? It's a process and, yeah.
But I, you know, I can identify with that lady because on Thursday I didn't have any big problem. And I was really in two minds whether I should go up there. I said, gosh, you know, there are people out there that are really sick and I shouldn't take up the time. And I was really in two minds to do it or not. And I did it, and I was glad. Because, as I said, it wasn't, I don't have big problems, but I feel much better about them. It, didn't correct them right away, but I feel so much better about the whole thing. But so to me, it was well worth it.
An example that I heard that illustrated what you just said was God wants to give us a 40-room mansion on 50 acres, and what we settle for is the outhouse on the back, too.
Right.
And He wants so desperately. Mm-hmm. To give it to us. He wants to give us an abundant life here, mm-hmm. Now.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. I think I would want to say in relationship to that, that and this is not in any way contradicting what you're saying, because I want to affirm that, is that sometimes abundant life from a Christian point of view looks very different to abundant life from another point of view. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be the life of pain and suffering, and a bunch of other things. It can be the discipleship or the cross thing. But that is abundant life too, and sometimes we fail to see that, and I think you're right. Okay, well, it has been suggested by a couple of people here in the sort of leadership of the village that we have another healing service towards the end of this coming week. Some of you won't be here, some of you will be here. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yes. Not too far at the end.
I'm not too sure where it'll be.
How about the middle?
But I think maybe, again, it would be necessary to have another talk about what healing is and preparation for that. Okay.
You know, the thing that was helpful to me is the whole concept of healing as opposed to in the very broad context of healing. You know, relationships among people, how we deal with ourselves, all these mysterious little different things that I hardly even thought of that evening, but you know, have occurred to me since. And you know, it could be such a beautiful thing in the congregation. Just to develop more of a,
yeah.
The people get along better and
it begins to affect, in fact, you know, when healing begins to take place, it affects the congregation a whole bunch of ways,
yeah.
That you hadn't anticipated. It really does. And sometimes when, I don't know if it's true in other churches than the one which we worship, but church meetings, when the congregation meets, can sometimes be terrifying events. And a great deal of unbrotherly love or unsisterly love and so on and so on. And sometimes if there's a healing ministry going on in that church, somehow there are resources that are more readily available to handle some of those problems.
Okay.